You are listening to Boston College Radio 90.3 FM, and this program is called Sounds of Dissent. On the line I have Dr. Stephen Best, PhD, who is the author of a new book called Terrorists of Freedom Fighters, Reflections on the Liberation of Animals. I will be speaking with him in just a moment, but first I'll tell you what else we have coming up in the program. After we talk with Dr. Best, we will be talking with author Ian Williams, who is a veteran journalist, media consultant, and the UN correspondent for The Nation magazine. He's also the author of the new book, Deserter, Bush's War on Military Families, Veterans, and His Past. That's at 12:45, and at about 1:15, we're going to speak with someone from the local chapter of United for Justice with Peace, the group that is organizing the march in New York City tomorrow at the Republican National Convention. And then at about 1:40, we'll also have some headlines and go up until about 2 o'clock. We have an extended version of Sounds of Dissent this week. We'll be going until 2 o'clock, so stay with us. We have lots of interesting discussions coming up. And so now we'll speak with Dr. Stephen Best. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Best.
Hello. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, so I've heard you say things like, we have a new civil war on the politics of nature. On one side, we have people who exploit the earth and destroy lives of animals, and on the other side, we have people ready to escalate the struggle to protect animals and nature and the earth. And I'd like to see how we can talk about this in relevance to what's going to be happening tomorrow in New York and the Patriot Act and its influence on all of these movements and people who want to dissent to what's going on in our government.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay. Well, I read your book. I really enjoy it. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
So go on. You were going to say something. Sorry.
Well, interesting.
Oh, you're breaking up a little bit. You say?
Me?
Yeah, okay. you were breaking up.
We're in a very dark, repressive period of history, but it's also one that is going to be characterized by increasingly intense struggle. And one thing that characterizes this period is the growing maturity of the animal rights movement, the animal liberation movement, particularly in England. We can see this right now, that I would say one of the hottest, if not the hottest, social struggle of our period right now is the animal liberation movement. It is every human group that's been oppressed has had their liberation movement that they are still struggling to achieve, its goals, its victory. And now we find that the animal liberation movement is coming into its own. And I think an important challenge will be articulating these two struggles together, the human rights movement and the animal rights movement, grasping their unity, seeing what we have in common, learning from each other, and forming a truly broad coalition. I regularly hear human rights activists talking about a coalition of struggles, and rarely do they include animal rights in the struggle, and sometimes the environmental struggles are left out too. We have a truly comprehensive struggle to organize, and to leave the animal rights people out of it, and the intense energy being organized around this cause, this is a real tactical mistake. This is the abolitionist movement of our time. We fought, and we almost had a civil war in the 19th, indeed throughout the 20th century, over the human race question. So I do think a new civil war is beginning to form over the new abolitionist struggle, the new slavery question, and that is the question over animal slavery and the huge efforts to abolish that, not just reform it, but to abolish it.
So in relation to what's going to be going on in New York tomorrow and the government, and I have a quote from you from your video, Direct Action in the Politics of Nature. The Bush program is to eliminate all citizen dissent as it aggregates the advantages and the wealth of the ruling classes. So can you reflect on that?
Yeah, well, it's so obvious that this war on terror is really a war on democracy, and that it's all just a smokescreen. There are real terrorists out there in the world, but their threat to us has been highly exaggerated, and whatever threat exists is largely because of the actions of the real terrorists. Those are the people sitting in the highest offices of our government and the people heading up the corporations of the United States in particular. And so what we are about to see is yet another example in New York City now of what I term to be post-constitutional America. We are losing our constitutional rights in a really radical way with the Patriot Act and other such measures. And what we've seen by the last few attempts to organize large demonstrations, the anti-war demonstration in New York in 2003, the FTAA demonstration in Miami, has been a massive police and security state that we now live in, where all liberty is sacrificed on the altar of security, as if these are two entirely different concerns. And we've see that the ruling elites have the perfect rationale now to suppress all rights to free speech, all rights to dissent, and that is that all of this poses a security threat, and most prominent amongst our concerns has to be our security. And so this rationale is being used in the most cheap, tawdry, and transparent ways right now in New York City to deny the rights of 250,000 people, perhaps, to march in these streets in a visible and powerful way. And what we see in terms of what the animal rights movement shares with all the human rights movements is that we first and foremost need one fundamental right, whatever we're struggling for. That is the right to freedom of speech and the right to dissent. And so human liberation is animal liberation, and animal liberation is human liberation. Our first and foremost thing that we are all struggling for is the most basic right of all, the right to freedom of speech and to dissent. And we're all losing it.
You are
in
listening
really radical, obvious ways.
Oh, sorry to interrupt. I was just going to say, you are listening to Sounds of Dissent, a program here on WZBC in Newton, and we are speaking with Dr. Stephen Best, Ph.D. He's the author of a new book called Terrorists or Freedom Fighters, Reflections on the Liberation of Animals. He is also the associate professor and chair of the philosophy department at the University of Texas in El Paso, and we here at WZBC welcome your questions if you'd like to give us a call at 617-552-3511. We can't put you live on the air. We don't have the technology here, but my colleague Tracy will take your questions and hand them over to me, and I can ask them to Dr. Best if there's anything you'd like to ask. Again, the phone number is 617-552-3511. I also do have the instant messenger open. You can instant message me at WZBCDJ. Okay, and so I'd really like to talk more about the Patriot Act and its effects. So I have another quote from your video. The irony of the title of the Patriot Act is just too much to bear because it attacks every liberty that any patriot ever fought or died for. Orwell has to be spinning in his grave because this is taking doublespeak to a totally new height. That particularly stuck with me after watching your video. And so could you reflect on that?
The Patriot Act was probably waiting in the wings for an event like 9/11 to happen. If not, it was drafted very quickly. It is over 300 pages of dense legal verbiage, but the upshot of it is very clear. It is meant to kneecap our rights, our constitutionally guaranteed rights to freedom of speech, and the whole Bill of Rights is under incredibly systematic, sweeping attack. Less than 1 month after the 9/11 attack, the Patriot Act was rushed into legal reality. Almost no one had a chance to read it. Literally, it went into enactment overnight. There was only one sole voice in Congress of dissent. And it is and remains a very frightening doctrine. It is designed to attack the rights not only of foreigners, first and foremost, but also of citizens. First, some 3,000 to 4,000, perhaps up to 5,000 foreigners, immigrants, many here legally, that perhaps many people that forgot perhaps to renew their visas, were rounded up and thrown in jail without any right to even know what charges were being brought against them, therefore without any Fourth Amendment constitutional rights. Some of them remain in jail to this day, and they have not had a chance to speak to a lawyer, they have not had a chance to speak to families, they are simply locked away. That has happened to thousands of foreigners, or if you will, non-citizens here in this country. And they have constitutional rights too, and those have been systematically denied and violated. Similarly, the Patriot Act created a new language of domestic terrorism, whereby unidentified domestic terrorists, in the broadest and most vague language possible, basically a domestic terrorist is anyone who seeks to coerce or intimidate the government. Well, this really is the very essence of politics and a political struggle. All political struggle is meant to be some kind of intimidation, to intimidate some other actor to act, to do something within the social body. And through this new discourse of domestic terrorism, the animal rights movement has been stigmatized, the anti-war movement has been stigmatized, and you see, it's a semantic trick, but also a very real problem, because once the government can call you a terrorist or domestic terrorist, once it can hang that label on you, then it follows as a fait accompli that they can pass against you, or they can use against you all of the legislation, some of the most harsh legislation to deny freedom. They can use that against you, this anti-terrorist legislation, because you are now a terrorist. The Patriot Act allows the government to contact librarians to find out what books we have checked out, or to call bookstore owner managers and find out what books we have bought. And they put them under a gag order so that they cannot tell you that they have been contacted, and they cannot complain to the media. The government can enter our homes and sneak and peek operations, or enter our workplaces, download all of our information from our computers, and simply walk away, and perhaps a month later at best, tell you that such an operation was conducted. They have complete access, they have the right to complete access to all of our personal information, our school records, our medical records. They can track all of our correspondence, all of our communication from email or from phone. All they have to do, if anything, because there is no longer an independent judicial body reviewing government subpoenas for these kinds of things, all they have to do is to say this is a security interest.
So what would someone have to worry about if they were, say, marching in New York tomorrow, like myself? Would I have to worry about anything?
Well, they have to worry about being contacted by the FBI first and foremost. The preemptive strikes by the FBI are going to homes to people throughout the country, saying that we understand you intend to protest, or do you know anybody who intends to protest? Once they get there, they may never be able to protest. They may be immediately arrested. The FBI and the police may enter a building where activists are staying and simply handcuff them and drag them away to jail before they've done anything on the logic of the preemptive strike that they may imperil social order. Once they get on the streets, they may be brutally repressed by cops mounted on horseback, cops in full riot RoboCop-type gear, cops swinging batons, and they may be simply locked up for days on end without any chance to contact a lawyer or friends or family. Any number of things can and will happen to protesters in New York City. And so one would logically be afraid of coming out to protest, and this is exactly what they want. They want these chilling messages to get to the public, to stop a quarter million people from coming to New York City, and to make this convention work smoothly, and make this a victory for George Bush. But I encourage anyone who has even the slightest scintilla of fear or doubt about whether or not to protest, to please go and protest in the most vigorous fashion that you can, because they are counting on you to be intimidated.
We have to
mount the strongest resistance this government has yet seen.
We will have someone from the group United for Justice with Peace with us in just a little while at 1:15, so we'll give you updates. And you can go to their website, Justice with Peace, for information on buses, and it's my understanding that their buses are full, but they do have information about other buses that you can take down to New York City. And I do have a question from a listener, if I could read it to you, Dr. Best.
Sure.
Can you ask the speaker to talk about the Shaq case, the animal rights activists that have been jailed?
I'm very happy to talk about that.
This is from Sanford in Belmont. I meant to say that.
Okay, sure. I refer all the listeners to go to Impact Press online. Just type in Impact Press, and there you will find the cover story that I've written with a friend of mine on the case of the Shaq 7. Shaq, of course, stands for Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty. They're a very militant animal rights group, a movement in the UK and in the US. They have one focus, that is to bring down HLS, Huntington Life Sciences, one of the most barbaric animal testing companies on the planet. They kill at least 500 animals a day. Shaq activists, seven of them, recently, a month or so back, were rounded up. At the crack of dawn, in four states, seven activists rounded up by the FBI and local police and thrown in jail. For what? For running a website. For what? For exercising their constitutional rights to free speech. They had done nothing illegal, and yet they were arrested, and they are facing all kinds of criminal charges, not unrelated to the Patriot Act. Actually, they go back to a 1992 anti-terrorism law, which is designed to protect the normal operations of animal exploitation industries. This was the first law created against animal rights activists. It's called the 1992 Title 18 law. And it says, in effect, that any activist who interferes with the business routines and operations of an animal enterprise is committing a criminal act. So, for instance, boycotts could be interpreted to be a criminal act under this kind of legislation. Martin Luther King would be considered certainly a domestic terrorist today, could be routinely arrested for his nonviolent activities. So the Shaq case is very chilling because it shows what the government intends to do to activists of any kind. And it is yet another example that we live in post-constitutional America where the right to exercising the right to free speech will get you thrown in jail. So we really don't have any right to free speech. It's very easy to talk about this in abstract. But as soon as you begin to exercise it, you find out that it does not exist because you will be repressed, you will be surveilled, and you will be thrown in jail or perhaps worse. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask you, since the publication of this video, Direct Action and the Politics of Nature, you talked about the son of the Patriot Act, and I wondered whatever happened with that.
That's still in effect. The son of the Patriot Act, or Patriot Act 2, is more legislation still that was kept secret. And, in fact, the Bush administration lied to Congress and said it did not exist. But a group called the Center for Public Integrity uncovered a draft of this legislation, which is meant to supplement the first original Patriot Act legislation, and we find out some really chilling things that the government have planned for us in the future. And as if the Patriot Act 1 did not go far enough, this legislation proposes that anyone who is claimed or suspected to be a threat, terrorist, their information, it should be put up on a website, their picture, their personal information, in the manner that they do today with sex offenders. And so anyone deemed to be a domestic terrorist, really anyone practicing or engaging in civil disobedience or public dissent, will be treated like a sex offender with their information posted on a website. Worse still, they want to claim the right to banish, to expatriate anyone that they deem to be a terrorist or unfit for a well-functioning social order machine. So, in effect, the government has legislation ready to spring into action, perhaps waiting for another type of 9/11 attack that will be even more repressive than the first Patriot Act, and make our job as dissidents, as citizens in a democracy, or what used to be something resembling a democracy, make this job even more difficult. It's really chilling to see when you uncover the secret documents, to see what the government has in store for us.
You are listening to Sounds of Dissent here on Boston College Radio. We have Dr. Stephen Best. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there again. Dr. Best is Associate Professor and Chair of the Philosophy Department at the University of Texas in El Paso. He is Vice President of the Vegetarian Society of El Paso and President of the El Paso Animal Rights Group Stop Animal Neglect and Exploitation, otherwise known as SANE. He is a journalist for the Animal Rights Online and with Anthony Nocella, a founding member of the Center on Animal Liberation Affairs. He is co-host of the Animal Rights Vegan Radio Show, Animal Concerns of Texas, and regularly gives talks to the community and local schools on issues relating to health, animal rights, and environmentalism. And his website can be found at our website. There's a link if you go to wzbc.org and go to the current playlist function. You can see what we're doing here today on Sounds of Dissent. And we are taking your questions. I have another question for you, Dr. Best. Nick from Boston asks, the Supreme Court has overturned some parts of the Patriot Act relating to Guantanamo. Do you think the Supreme Court will continue to find parts of the act unconstitutional?
Well, it is a good sign that the prisoners at Guantanamo Bay are getting some kind of judicial review. And what this suggests is that the executive branch of the government, which by and large has happened under the Patriot Act, has not been able to completely diminish, it's called court stripping, strip the power of the legislative and or judicial branches of the government. Because this was the goal of the Patriot Act, and it has been accomplished to some extent, to take this three-tiered system of our government, the three branches of government, which the founding fathers tried to keep autonomous from one another, and to strip this autonomy away and take all of the power of the legislative and judicial branch of the government into the executive branch of the government, so that the FBI, the Justice Department, the Bush administration as a whole would have complete power over everything in society. And now that the Supreme Court has begun to mount some challenges to this, we see an important sign that there might still be some life left in this three-tiered system so important for the functioning of a democracy. Well, in 2005, the Patriot Act is due to come up for a congressional review, and some of the most repressive measures of the Patriot Act could fall away as no longer necessary to achieve, to preserve order in the face of a terrorist threat in society. So we're not sure what's going to happen in 2005, but surely they will be able to devise enough threats, real or imagined, to insist that security is our most important social value and not liberty, and to keep the Patriot Act alive. So what the future will bring in 2005 is not clear. It'll be much clearer if George Bush is elected as a president, although reelected, although John Kerry has been a supporter of the Patriot Act too. So again, the Supreme Court decision is a good sign that there can be challenges mounted to the Bush administration from within the political or judicial system.
I have actually heard about some cities throughout the United States actually deeming the Patriot Act not valid in their own city.
Not just some city, but I think the total is up to 350 now. It's well over 300. We did this here in El Paso. I led an effort here locally to declare the Patriot Act unconstitutional. And four states have done this, and over 300 communities. And basically this involves taking a petition, taking some kind of movement to your local city council and to ask them to declare the Patriot Act unconstitutional. This can either be purely symbolic, actually that's an important statement right there in itself, because if Congress does review this Patriot Act in 2005 and they learn, as they will, that hundreds of communities have protested against this, that could well influence their decision as to what to reenact and what to block. So you can take a movement to your local city council and have them ask them to pass a measure against the Patriot Act, and it could be, if not just symbolic, it could have some real teeth in it. For instance, in Ithaca, I believe they passed some laws such that people going to libraries are advised of their rights and advised that the FBI may be monitoring what they are reading. And people in city government in Ithaca, I believe, are required to report to the city council if FBI agents are engaged in activities that might violate citizens' rights. So there have been some important resistances at the community level, and it's very important that everyone in their local community initiate such a drive. You can find out a lot more information just by going to the ACLU website.
You're listening to Sounds of Dissent here on Boston College Radio. My guest is Dr. Stephen Best, and I'm Petrini here filling in for host John Grebe. We have an extended program today. We'll be here until 2 o'clock. It is now about 12:28, and we are taking your questions. I can't put you live on the radio with Dr. Best, but I can take your question by phone. Tracy, my colleague here, will hand me your question if you want to give a call to 617-552-3511 if you have any questions for Dr. Stephen Best. And our website is wzbc.org. You can go to the current playlist function to see what we're up to today here on Sounds of Dissent on WZBC and Newton 90.3 FM. Another question I had for you relating to legislature was there was a House bill, was it 833? That was in Texas. That was presented by some hunters, I think, a hunters group.
Yeah, the U.S. Sportsmen's Alliance, USSA, in conjunction with a group called ALEC, which is a legislative council. I think it's the American Legislative Executive Council, something like that, ALEC. And they were a corporate front group. And together with the cooperation of the United Sportsmen's Association, they have worked through, beginning in Texas and now throughout the country. Once again, Texas is a model state for repressive legislation, beginning with George Bush as our governor here before he took to the country what he did to us. But this legislation is similar to the domestic terrorist parts of the Patriot Act. But this specifically targets any activist opposed to the animal exploitation and environmental exploitation industries. And the Animal Rights and Ecological Terrorism Acts, as they are called, is designed to criminalize any activist actions that, again, impede the profits of animal exploitation or environmental exploitation industries, and to bring felony crimes against such activists. This goes even farther than the Patriot Act. If you are caught on the property of an animal or environmental exploitation industry, a timber organization, a timber company, for instance, or a factory farming enterprise, you can be charged with a serious or a felony crime. If you are even a whistleblower within one of these industries, you can be charged with a crime. The crime is impeding the profits, the normal operations of these industries. The crime is giving them a bad public relations name. So you know, here we have another example of the loss of freedoms in our society today, and the criminalization of what used to be ordinary protest-type activity. To give you another example, they are currently in the courts because of the shack, the effectiveness of the shack movement. They're trying to criminalize home demonstrations to make it illegal to go to someone's home, not just their business, but their home, and to protest, say, a vivisector at their home. In England, I believe they recently did pass this legislation because of the very powerful shack movement there. And they are trying to do it here in the United States. So what was once a legal activity soon might become illegal. Scary times.
Yes, very scary. For a link to Dr. Best's website where you can see some of his new book, Terrorists or Freedom Fighters, you can go to our website, wzbc.org, click on Current Playlist, and it will link you over to Dr. Best's website. And why don't I ask you more about your book, Terrorists or Freedom Fighters, Reflections on the Liberation of Animals. It's published by Lantern Books, And when did that come out? Just a few months ago, right?
Yeah, just a few months ago.
And it is a collection of essays?
Yeah, we have about 23 essays in there from the leading suspects, the main domestic terrorists, people like Paul Watson, Ingrid Newkirk, Rod Coronado, Karen Davis, myself. It is a unique book in that it collects so many diverse viewpoints, most of which have been written explicitly for the book. We have a cover by Sue Coe, an original cover by Sue Coe, the famous animal rights artist. We have a preface by Ward Churchill, the famous AIM social liberation activist. And we have a nice balance of essays about half women, half men, three contributions by Native American Indians, all talking about animal liberation and the ALF. Really is the first such book on the animal liberation front. Ingrid Newkirk wrote a book called Free the Animals a few years back, and that was a nice book on the ALF. The ALF has been in existence for 30 years in England and the United States and some 20 countries. And this is the first comprehensive overview of it. One nice thing about the book is that it is balanced by academic and activist viewpoints. So the activists speak, and the academics analyze the historical, ethical, social, philosophical significance of the animal liberation movement. And that's one of the things that makes this a very unique book. And this is important because every liberation movement that evolves, that becomes mature politically, will have a body of scholars analyzing it historically, politically, philosophically. And finally, this is happening with the ALF. This book is a first indication. My own Center on Animal Liberation Affairs is yet another important indication that this movement is percolating upwards into academia, meaning that it seems to be a very serious, substantive, and valid and legitimate liberation movement. It's certainly not a domestic terrorist movement, the ALF. It is a liberation movement. And so the question posed in the title of the book, Terrorists or Freedom Fighters, I think is amply answered in the contents of the book. The ALF, the Shack movement, anyone involved in the liberation of animals, they are the real freedom fighters. And the real terrorists, again, are the people running the insane asylum, people occupying the highest offices in corporate America and in the U.S. State.
And on your website, you can read the intro, is that right? I think I saw
that. Yeah, you can read the table of contents and the introduction to the book on my website or at the CALA website, the Center for Animal Liberation Affairs.
Oh, okay, and what is that? Is it
best thing to do, I think it's www.kayla.org/org. Just type in the Center on Animal Liberation Affairs in the Google search engine, and you should get it.
Okay, and you can also, as I mentioned before, link from our website, wzbc.org. Go to the current playlist function, and you can see what we're doing here today on Sounds of Dissent on WZBC in Newton. My guest is Dr. Stephen Best, Ph.D., and we're talking about his book, Terrorists or Freedom Fighters, and its relevance with the Patriot Act and everything that's happening in New York tomorrow with the RNC. We do have another question from a listener. First, I'll remind everyone, we are taking your questions at 617-552-3511. If you'd like to call in, my colleague Tracy will take your question and hand it over to me. Mark from Brighton asks, do you think the terrorist attacks in the U.S., Spain, and other places could be false flag propaganda in order to get the Patriot Act passed?
I wouldn't put anything past the U.S. government. Conspiracy theories are interesting, and I actually don't believe that that is the case, although it is not beyond their lying, duplicitous, evil, unethical ways to kill people, to plant an attack in order to further their agenda, which is total control over the economic resources of the world and the total pacification of the citizens of the U.S. and other leading states. Some people speculate that 9/11 itself was a conspiracy, that it was organized by economic elite, the economic and political elite. There are entire books to that effect. I really can't judge that question one side or the other, although I don't find it totally implausible. But, you know, all of this is blowback. If they're not involved in these kind of attacks directly, the elites, are indirectly, because these kinds of actions are taken against the government and corporate America because of the imperialist actions that they engage in around the world. So it is a kind of blowback. It is a kind of ye shall reap what you sow dynamic that we see. It's often said that bin Laden and the Al-Qaeda, they hate us for what we represent. They hate us for our freedoms. They hate us for our values. They do hate us for that. That's not why they strike at the World Trade Towers, centers, and other areas. They strike at us because we've been occupying their land. They strike at us because we have proved to be an aggressive, threatening presence around the world. So one way or the other, this system is responsible for all this terrorism. And that's why George Bush, it's laughable. It's laughable when Bush says that he's made the world a safer place. He has escalated the dangers to this planet, to and the people and all of life within it. He's escalated it to the nth degree because of his provocative, imperialist, preemptive strike policies.
You are listening to Sounds of Dissent on Boston College Radio, 90.3 FM, and I have time for one more question for you, Dr. Best, and I'd like to thank you for being with us today. My question is going to be about the term ethical veganism. How did you come to be a vegan, and what does ethical veganism mean to you?
Ethical veganism means, it's what some people call deep vegetarianism, or deep veganism, I guess. To be a vegan or vegetarian for health reasons only is a good thing, but it hardly scratches the surface of what it's really about. It's still a selfish act if you do it only for your own good. But when you do it for the good of others, when you do it for the animals, for the planet, and indeed for the other human beings on this planet that are affected by the disastrous consequences of a global meat culture and a global meat-based diet. We do it for the good of others and not just for your own health. Then it becomes ethical veganism, or it becomes deep vegetarianism, deep veganism, because you're doing it for deeper reasons. You're doing it for reasons that show that you understand the holistic web of connections between what you eat and the consequences of that on other living beings and on the rest of the planet. And so ethical veganism, I think, is the most profound personal statement a person can make on this planet. It's not recycling. It's not driving a hybrid car. These are important things, but ultimately trivial. The most important thing that you can do is to stop consuming meat and dairy products. That will have the greatest ecological, political, and ethical consequences on this planet. Personally, I became a vegan 10 years ago. I became a vegetarian some 25 years ago, and it happened in an epiphany in a White Castle restaurant, 2 in the morning in Chicago. I led a carnivorous life just like anybody else. I wasn't born a vegan. I was in my early 20s. I was stuffing a double cheeseburger into my mouth at a White Castle restaurant, and for some reason, inexplicably, I had a profound epiphany that I was eating the ground-up remains of a living being. I had read no literature, I'd heard no lecture by anyone like Howard Lyman. I knew nothing. I was totally ignorant. But I had this lightning bolt intuition that this was wrong. And from then on, I became a vegetarian. I started researching the situation. And I realized just how profound that intuition was and how profound veganism is. I began to make all of the connections, not just my own health, but social justice, environmental issues, the treatment of animals in factory farms and slaughterhouses, all of the dots begin connected. And that's what ethical veganism is connecting the dots, is becoming aware of the global implications, the vast global implications of what seems to be only a personal choice. It's not a personal choice, it's a political choice, what we eat, and it's a very profound issue. I encourage everyone to find out more about vegetarianism. If you're not a vegetarian, go vegetarian. If you are a vegetarian, go vegan. One of the best sites amongst millions would be goveg.com.
Dr. Stephen Best is Associate Professor and Chair of the Philosophy Department at the University of Texas in El Paso, and he has been here with me for about half an hour. Thank you for all of your time. It's been wonderful.
Well, it's been my profound pleasure.
Well,
thank you very much.
It's great to have you here on Sounds of Dissent. And again, the book that he has published recently is called Terrorists or Freedom Fighters, and there's a link to his website at our website, WZBC.org, and you're in Texas right now, so thanks for taking the time. And I'm getting one more question from a listener, but I think I'm going to have to put that off for now. We've got another caller, another guest in just a few minutes. So thank you again, Dr. Best.
Thank you. Take care, everybody.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Sounds of Dissent on WZBC in Newton, 90.3 FM. And I'm going to play a song right now. This is a song called The Landscape is Changing. I thought it was an appropriate political statement for just a few minutes while we get our next caller on the phone. are listening to WZBC Boston College Radio 90.3 FM. This program is called Sounds of Dissent.